The next morning, after a large breakfast prepared by Yule and Cord, we started the journey north. Cord's fetch stayed behind. Our caravan consisted of the Kraid vehicles, that of Yulasitar containing most of the gear, that of Ganeliel carrying his three-wheeler in the back. The first leg was north and downhill to the coastal plain, a turn to the right when we neared salt water, and then a long sweeping leftward curve as we skirted a gulf of the northern ocean. At the head of that gulf lay what had been the greatest port in the world for a couple of centuries back in the first millennium AR, when the water had stayed ice-free all year round. Because of its location, it had later become the shallowest of all ruins, the easiest to mine. Most of its great works, its viaducts, seawalls, and bridges, had been hammered apart by scavengers who had extracted the reinforcing bars buried in the synthetic stone and shipped the metal to places where it was needed. The rubble mounds were forested with immense trees. The only remaining structure from that age was a suspension bridge over the great river that emptied into the head of the gulf. It was high enough above sea level that the resurgent pack ice had not crushed it. At this time of year, there was no ice to be seen, but it was easy to make out the scars it had left along the rubble banks. This port ruin now functioned as a fishing village and drummond stop. A few hundred people lived here, at least in the summer. Once we left it behind and struck inland, heading almost due north, we saw only scattered settlements, which thinned and failed as we climbed into forested hills. We then descended into an unmistakably different landscape. Taiga, a country too dry and cold for trees to grow much higher than a person's head. Almost all traffic had vanished from the highway. We drove for an hour without seeing any other vehicles. Finally, we stopped in a rocky place near a river, pulled our vehicles round to where they couldn't be seen from the road, and slept in our suit sacks. The next morning, the brand new stove we had bought after leaving Sambal stopped working. If Yule hadn't joined us, we'd have spent the rest of the trip eating cold energy bars. Yule, looking quietly triumphant, produced a thunderous breakfast on his battery of roaring industrial burners. Watching his cousin work, Ganel seemed proud, if exasperated, as if to say, "Look at what fine people we can produce when they stop believing in our religion." Since there was almost no traffic on the road, I took driving lessons from Yule while Cord dismantled the stove. She diagnosed the problem as a clogged orifice, attributable to gunk that had precipitated from the fuel during the cold night. "You're fuming," she pointed out a while later. I realized that I had withdrawn from the conversation. She and Yule had been talking, but I hadn't heard a word of their conversation. "What is the problem?" "I just can't believe that in this day and age we are having a problem with chemical fuel," I said. "Sorry, we should have bought the premium brand." "No, it's not that. Nothing for you to be sorry about. I'm just pointing out that this stove is 4,000-year-old praxis." Cord was nonplussed. "Same goes for this fetch and everything in it," she said.
"Hey!"
Yule cried, mock wounded. Cord scoffed, rolled her eyes, and turned her attention back to me. "Everything except for your sphere, that is. So? I guess because I live in a place with almost zero praxis, it never occurs to me to think about such things," I said. "But at times like this, the absurdity hits me between the eyes. There's no reason to put up with junk like this. A stove with dangerous, unreliable chemical fuel? With orifices that clog? In 4,000 years, we could have made a better stove. Would I be able to take that stove apart and fix it? You wouldn't have to, because it would never break. But I want to know if I could understand such a stove." "You're the kind of person who could probably understand just about anything if you set your mind to it." "Nice flattery, Raz, but you keep dodging the question." "All right. I take your point. You're really asking if the average person could understand the workings of such a thing. I don't know what an average person is. But look at Yule here. He built this fetch himself. Didn't you, Yule?" Yule was uneasy that Cord had suddenly made this conversation about him, but he deferred to her. He glanced away and nodded.
"Yep, got the burners from scavengers, welded up the frame."
"And it worked," Cord said. "I know," I said, and patted my belly. "No, I mean the system worked," Cord insisted. "What system?" She was exasperated.
The non-system, Yule said. "The lack of a system."
"Yule knew that stoves like this were unreliable," Cord said. nodding at the broken one. He had learned that from experience.
Oh, bitter experience, my girl,
Yule proclaimed. He ran into some scavengers who had found better burner heads in a ruin up north, haggled with them, figured out a way to hook them up. Probably has been tinkering with them ever since.
Took me 2 years to make it run right,
Yule admitted. And none of that would have been possible with some kind of technology that only an avout can understand, Cord concluded. Okay, okay, I said, and let it drop there. Letting the argument play out would have been a waste of breath. We, the Theors, who'd retreated, or depending on how you liked your history, been herded into the maths at the Reconstitution, had the power to change the physical world through praxis. Up to a point, ordinary people liked the changes we made. But the more clever the praxis became, the less people understood it and the more dependent they became on us. And they didn't like that at all.